Left, right, and center with Jeff Schlemmer and Bob Metz. Welcome, guys.
Morning, Jim.
Now, before we get into the topic that's kind of on the table here, I just want to revisit one we talked about briefly today, just to see if you have any thoughts on it. Earlier in the show, we spent more than an hour talking about legalization of prostitution and marijuana from this perspective, that tobacco companies today, tobacco is legal, the government is talking about putting $100 million into a transition fund to kind of wean certain public events like the Montreal Jazz Festival and Comedy Festival and so on, to wean them off of tobacco money. And we had a call, and we discussed whether that was a good idea or not, and a caller phoned and said that, you know, yeah, we shouldn't ban it in the first place. Just let's take all the money they want to give us. I mean, if the money's there and they can be put to a good use, then what does it matter where it comes from? And I asked her then, would she extend it to prostitution and legalizing soft drugs, for example, and soft drug marijuana, because based on this recent case in London, to the best of our knowledge right now, is a relatively benign substance. And that's not my opinion. This is what the judge said in ruling in this case, in the Chris Clay case. So that's why I added that. And she said, well, yeah, absolutely. We should legalize both of them and make as much money as we can. Either of you guys have any thoughts on that, or do you want to move ahead to where we're going?
I agree with the concept of legalization, but not for the purpose of simply making money. I think it's a fundamental right to abuse yourself. I don't care, you know, in the sense whether someone else regards that as abuse and you just think it's a use of a drug or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a fundamental freedom that you have, but that freedom, again, has to be attached to the responsibility of any consequences of that action.
So from your perspective, then the idea to do it as a fundraiser is not really
That may be, I mean, there are people making money on the illegality of drugs today and on the illegality of prostitution in greater percentages of profits than anything that would happen on a free market.
Hey, Jeff, you have any thoughts on either prostitution or marijuana?
Yeah, well, I think, and it's interesting that some of these issues do cross over from the left and the right, it seems, although it may just be my Southern Ontario upbringing, but I don't like the idea of profiting on things that we consider to be bad things, and I think it's sort of a slippery slope. I saw something on TV the other day about how when the Great Depression hit in Chicago, that the first guy to set up soup kitchens was Al Capone.
Yes.
And that they had guys down and outers raving about what a wonderful guy he was, you know. Mm-hmm. This is guys going around cracking skulls with baseball bats and
not very many
mafia.
just
as many as had to be,
just the other bad guys,
with profound regret. And I think that is the slippery slope and the danger. The other aspect about this money that's coming from tobacco companies to do Grand Prix racing and stuff like that is that it's not created money. It's just money that we have in the economy that would be used some other way. This is where I wonder about when we hear about all this money that will be poured into the communities if we get a casino. I see Toronto wants a casino now because they say they'll have all this extra money in there. It's like, well, this money isn't created out of nothing. This is money that we'd be using just to spend on something else if it wasn't for that. So I think it's an illusion to say that money that tobacco companies put into sports, for instance, is some created thing. It's just money that we could be putting into it directly through ticket prices or whatever if we want to. But as far as the idea of whether marijuana and prostitution should be legal, I think they should be. And one of the big reasons is so they can be regulated. We've seen a proliferation in London apparently in the last year or two of massage parlors that are unregulated, and I think realistically it's there, it's going to exist, and the government should be keeping an eye on them to make sure they're hygienic and that basically they make the best of a bad situation.
But again, from your perspective, not as a fundraiser.
No, that's right.
Okay. We have a caller who says he wants to talk to the two of you right off the bat, so let's talk to him before we get into the other thing we'd had planned, and maybe we won't get into it, who knows. 643-1290 is our telephone number, *1290 on the Cantel, and you are always welcome to join this program at any time. And Robert is with us. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Following up on your show with Mr. Gardner and with your two guests, I think that, you know, you can sum up the argument in the if you define the role of government, and the difference between the two sides is, you know, should the government exist to protect our freedom of choice, or should the government exist to restrict it? And I think that's what all the arguments are really about. And I was wondering if your two guests could debate that proposition, because it seems to, come forward in almost all the arguments.
Well, sure. What the heck? Yeah, well, I'll wind them both up, and away we go. All right, thank you, Robert.
Okay, thanks. I'll just turn it and listen up now.
Okay.
Thanks.
I guess first, do you guys accept the premises that he put forth, or that on one hand, it is the belief that government should protect our freedom of choice, and on the other hand, that its primary role is to restrict it in, and I'm going to add a little bit to what Robert said, in, quote, positive ways. Either of you have any trouble with defining your positions kind of broadly that way?
Well, I certainly believe that the role of government is to protect individual choice, but in the protection of choice, there are restrictions placed upon one's freedom. Freedom is not a license. It's not a license mm-hmm. to do anything you want. Freedom is, in fact, if properly defined in a social setting, it is a limit on your actions. You are only free up to the point of the other guy's nose, so to mm-hmm. speak. And that's the concept of freedom. And that's why I think it's the only concept that works in a social setting, because it makes the individual the basic unit of society, not some group or some other identified interest group. And it puts everyone on an equal footing. I just, there are certain restrictions, but those restrictions are those that violate another individual's freedom of choice.
Jeff, are you comfortable with the not opposite, but shall we say the complementary definition of the role of government, which is to restrict our freedoms for our own good?
Well, it is sort of that chicken and egg thing again, that your freedom ends where it impacts someone else's freedom. And I think that what government effectively is the muscle behind what we collectively agree is where the line should be drawn, so that in some ways it is two sides of the coin. And I'm struck sometimes by the fact that I'm the one arguing that charters of rights and stuff protect individual freedoms and liberties, then I think Bob's view is that it's quite the opposite, that the government has the effect of denying those individual rights.
Well, our current charter gives the government that power, Section 15.2, the right to override the basic fundamental freedoms for the amelioration of disadvantaged groups. That, to me, is a violation of this principle, the government protecting our freedom of choice.
I know, and it all comes back to a question then of first of all, how you define what freedom is. And I suspect, without knowing what they had in mind, but I suspect that the idea of trying to ameliorate conditions for certain people in society is because they need a kickstart. The other aspect of it is, I say that for mind of it, it is two sides of the same coin. Both of us are arguing for freedom, along with Mel Gibson in, what was that movie?
Well, that's always been the issue. I think the battle is about defining what freedom is, and then hearing what each individual's definition of freedom actually is. Most of the people that I argue with who say they're fighting for freedom are fighting for freedom from responsibility. They don't want the responsibility of paying for their own education. They don't want the responsibility of paying for their own health care. What they want is someone third party to provide that, and then collectively all of us to be forced in some way to provide that kind of a freedom, which is not a true freedom. And any country that's tried that kind of freedom loses not only its freedom, but the benefit that it thought it was getting by giving up that amount of freedom. It's just a slow process. You just watch it day by day. It just chips away, and until you have neither left. And this is what concerns me, Jeff, when I hear you talk about freedom. I have a feeling that's the kind that you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about more of, if you talk about whether it's better to have a service provided by government or by private industry or somebody else, that's a housekeeping issue for me. It's a question.
Absolutely
How do you go about
but
getting
somebody
else's to where you
government,
want to go?
They don't housekeep.
We talk about which is cheaper and
they
which is more expensive and all that stuff. But as far as the protection of individual rights and freedoms, where I come from is that there are people who historically have had a harder time asserting them. So, for instance, over the years, women weren't allowed to own property, for instance. That, to me, is a restriction on their freedom. So
absolutely.
You bring in laws which say, we don't care whether people like it or not, from now on, women can own property. That gives them more freedom. In a sense, I suppose it takes some element of power or choice or whatever away from the men who had an exclusive right to it before.
Well, definitely. That was certainly a restriction on freedom. And property rights, incidentally, are the enabling right of all our freedoms. And I think if an individual doesn't have that fundamental right, they don't have any.
I want to read something here to you. This is from Bill's book, from his own essay here in Democracy Against the Family. And he quotes or paraphrases Alexis de Tocqueville, who wrote Democracy in America. This is a book that is widely quoted from people on all political perspectives, because he was a very insightful man, de Tocqueville. This was more than 100 years ago when he toured America and went back to Europe to report what he saw. Bill says, De Tocqueville noted that, and here's where I quote, "Modern democracy, under which individuals hewed most to their private selves, would serve as a sweet vehicle for the rise of statism, for a mild tyranny, that masses of individuals who surrender their faith in transcendent social bonds and purposes for the freedom of individual autonomy become ripe for takeover by government. Moral authority and social order must originate and arise from somewhere, and if not from religion, from family, community, and civil society, then it will descend with destructive and highly ideological vigor from government." Now, I guess in a sense what he's saying here is any society that does what our society appears to be doing on the one hand, and that is to emphasize the rights of the individual, is going to end up in a society that we also seem at the same time we're almost parallel paths, we also are increasing the statist role in this country. Are we in danger, Bob, if we follow what you're saying? That
I disagree with the premise that we are overemphasizing the rights of the individual. We are not. We are, in fact, taking away the part of the right that's the most important, and that's the responsibility aspect of it.
And yet, the Supreme Court, in interpreting the Charter and so on, has the appearance of favoring individual rights over collective rights.
Well, sure, it's like our Constitution. It's called the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and it exists to take them away, not to give them to us. You have, when people are taking away your rights, and by people I mean governments and interest groups and stuff, they are definitely going to use the same words so that, basically to fool you, so that you're not really seeing what they're doing and you're just hearing what they're saying. And just because a judge may call this particular individual right an individual right doesn't make it so. I think there's a more fundamental philosophical premise on what an individual right is based, and it has to be tied to responsibility. When a judge lets an individual off or is extremely lenient and doesn't make him responsible for his actions, like personally I think every thief and criminal in the court system who's stolen from somebody should be made to pay that something back to that somebody.
I agree.
That to me is the number one issue of responsibility.
Yeah.
And some people are calling not forcing those people to do that individual rights. Excuse me. No, that's not what it is. That's the bastardized, perverted version of individual rights that the socialists and the statists are selling us.
Well, I'm curious that Jeffrey just said you agree with that, that restitution, that kind of responsibility should be incumbent upon them.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, when I talk about sort of my perspective of what rights are, for me, responsibility is a big part of it. I don't know the people who are the ones who are saying I'd like a free ride and that's what I consider to be my right. What I know of is people who say they can't get a fair shake for whatever arbitrary reason is out there and that they want that arbitrariness taken away. And it reminds me of there's a line of, and I just can't remember which judge it was, I believe it was a judge though, who talked about the doors of the courthouse are open to all, just as are the doors of the Savoy Hotel. You know, that anybody can theoretically walk into the most expensive hotel in the world. Now, how long you'll be staying there.
Well, it's the old argument here, everybody's free to sleep under a bridge, whether you're a millionaire or a pauper.
Well, that's right. And so from my end of it, as far, I don't look at it in terms of responsibilities or not. And say again, as far as I'm aware, everybody that I know who's a left-winger says that you are responsible for your actions. You should take responsibility. And I don't know how we ended up with a system where you're not responsible for compensating victims of your crimes. Like, I don't know how that happened, frankly.
Well, how did it happen, Bob? I mean, there are some people who would say it happens, but particularly because of the efforts of the people on the left who said that, you know, there is a responsibility. Yes, a responsibility for every action, but the responsibility may not lie with the individual. It may be society's fault that little Johnny stole.
Well, but this has been the law for as long as, you know, certainly it's got to be for at least the 20th century. It's been the law for a long time. It's not a creation of the 60s or...
Well, it certainly crept into the law, and it comes from that, you know, modern liberalism, the idea that society is responsible for the actions of certain individuals, which I think any society that starts thinking like that is doomed. You cannot ascribe responsibility to other than an agent of action.
Right? But can you not say, is it not fair to say, though, Bob, that if you've got little Johnny, and little Johnny plainly came from an abusive family, and the supports in the community weren't there, and when a helping hand reached out to him might have made all the difference in turning him from the criminal path, that hand wasn't there, etc., etc., etc.
That still doesn't make little Johnny not responsible for his actions, because there's a lot of little Johnnies who went through the same through the same experience and didn't turn to crime.
Well, what about compassion for this one, though?
This myth, for example, that poverty causes crime is just refuted by our experience in the Depression. I mean, there wasn't a big crime wave in the Depression caused by poverty. If anything, there was a big wave of generosity and helpfulness, which I think is the nature of what would happen in a situation like that. Where the crime wave came from and where people got the idea that poverty causes crime, that's a big jump and a leap in logic. In fact, I was listening to author Thomas Sowell, American author, black activist, who grew up in Harlem, 1940s and stuff like that. He says people were poor. He said nobody thought anything of sleeping out on their balcony or on the fire escape at night. You know, there was no feeling of any feeling of violence or anything like that, even back then. This is all a recent phenomenon since the welfare state and the sense of entitlement that so many people have been encouraged to expect, and it's an entitlement given to them by governments.
I need to say, I just agree about the Depression and whether that caused violence and sort of violent upheavals and so on, that from everything that I've heard, it did, and there was all kinds of problems, and that there wasn't this massive wave of generosity. Back in those days, you had the governments like the Bennett government that said, you know, if you're unemployed, it's your own problem, too bad. I look to things like the Depression.
Well, that was the government saying it. That wasn't
that's
the
how
people
it came
saying
along.
It. I'm
people
talking
were desperately poor in Germany and had massive inflation and everything else. It was the economic problems that caused an Adolf Hitler to be able to rise to power. But the other aspect of it, though, as far as the question of whether there should be compassion for people who commit crimes and whether society has a role in all that, to me, that goes to the question of, first of all, if there is a role for society to say that society had something to do with it. That may deal with moral culpability, but it doesn't deal with responsibility. And from my standpoint, if you break something of somebody else's, you fix it. If you lose something of somebody else's, you replace it. And that's just fundamental. And I don't know if that's a left or a right kind of thing. That's just sort of the way it seems to me it ought to be.
Well, it would seem to be an objective system of justice to be working on that principle, but obviously our courts don't agree with either of us in that application of the law. But it's the broader social issues. Jeff, your argument always boils down to government efficiency. You seem to think government is more efficient at providing certain services than yeah, than the private sector. And I would like to see that proven. But those of your persuasion don't give those of my persuasion the freedom to try our idea out. You know, like I'm just saying, if you believe in socialism and the collective approach to things, you should have the right certainly to voluntarily join such an association, but not the right to force your fellow neighbors and people who disagree with you into such an association.
We're going to pause on that note. We're going to continue with Left, Right, and Center with Bob Metz and Jeff Schlemmer. And if you'd care to join us, you're always welcome at 643-1290, star 1290. If you have a comment on what either of our callers or either of our panelists have had to say this morning, perhaps they're missing a point and you'd like to make it. 643-1290 is the telephone number. And when we return, I'm going to bring up this word entitlement again. Yesterday on 1290 CJBK in the afternoon on the Pia Chandel Show, Pia was talking about a new report from Stats Canada about welfare and about the percentage of people who use it and so on and so on. I don't want to get into the numbers because that's not necessarily germane to what we're doing this morning, but it points us in another direction. And she was talking about this climate of what did she call it now? A society of slackers or slackness or something like that. Anyway, and one of the points she made has been made many times is that our system has changed from initially being one of benevolence from the government towards people in need to a demand on the part of those people that the government meet their needs, and which is now referred to, generally speaking, as entitlement. First time I ever heard that word in a Canadian context was in this studio from Marion Boyd, who was the minister of whatever she was at that time in the NDP, provincial NDP government. I'd never heard that word used in a Canadian context. And she talked about entitlement. People were entitled to this service and entitled to that money and entitled to this check and entitled eventually to pick my pocket because I put it to her in those terms. The word now has much wider currency in Canadian discussions of these issues. Jeff, I want to start by asking you, do you believe that Canadians are entitled to the benefits of the society as a whole? And this was one of the points Pia was making too, that some people believe we're a wealthy country, ergo everyone is entitled to some share of that wealth.
I hate using words that say this is the way it is and no explanation of why it's the way it is. I think that's something that's going to be unsatisfying to anybody who disagrees with it, and that's why I never use the word like right. I never say somebody has a right to this or a right to that. I would not say somebody is entitled to this or that. Same as we hear in government often about privileges. Driving is a privilege, it's not a right, you know, and therefore, you know, we can take away your license anytime we feel like it and so on. Those words are not that useful for me. The more useful way to look at it is to talk about, should it be this way or should it not, and why? And from my end of it, if somebody says, should we have a welfare state? Should we look after people who are poor and give them some minimal standard of living? I'd say that's a smart idea. If we don't do that, our society would be a lot worse than it is now.
So you don't use the word right. You see no value in the concept of the word right.
No, I don't. And part of the reason for that
I find that remarkable.
In this context?
Well, what you find out on this show.
But isn't he? What he's saying is he agrees with you. He's saying that the people do not have the right to that money. They don't have the right to that share in the public wheel.
Well, no, he said they do. He says he agrees with those kinds of programs that help people like that out.
I think it's a good idea, and I can tell you why, but I'm not saying it's because
the reason I believe it's a bad idea is precisely because to have such a system would require the violation of rights of people. And that accrued, you know, you seem to think that rights don't really exist, that they're just some abstract concept that has nothing to do with their application to reality, when in fact it's quite the opposite. I remember one time you and I were arguing on the show and on some show past, and you said something to the effect that property rights were just some convention made up by some guy who wanted to build a cabin in the woods.
Well, they are.
Well,
you can't point to a tablet in stone somewhere to say that property is somehow a different.
But you just identified
different importance than life or any of the other things people say are rights.
But Jeff, in that very statement, you identified the reason you have to have a property right to protect your cabin in the woods. If you build the cabin, that is how you acquire the right to the cabin. It is your labor that has created this thing, and therefore it is yours by right. That's how rights originated.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, are those rights? You know, they're things that are important to people, but who says it's a right?
Well, happiness isn't a right, but you can pursue it all you want. That is a right. Life and liberty, life, not life itself in the sense that someone else has to provide you with a living, but life in the sense that you have a freedom of action to provide your own life without the resistance or artificial, stopping of other people. But, you know, you said yourself why you need a right. If you build a cabin in the woods, it's yours. No one else can walk into it and just sit down.
Well, in some cultures it is, but lots of cultures it's not. From my end of it, you know, rights are something that we refer to some baseline source. It's like, well, it's a right because the Bible set out 10 commandments. That's our source of authority. From my end of it, I look at, like, who says it's a right? Who can point to this is the way it is, and that's all there is to it?
It's a metaphysical fact. A right is you have a hierarchy of values, and at the base you have these rights. In order to enable us
quite different than rights.
Right is a value. I mean, I value Maybe. Individual freedom, and that is a right that I have in society,
but
whether the government acknowledges it or not.
A value is the way you think you should live. You say that these are good things and these are bad things. To take from somebody is a bad thing. And it just seems to make sense to me that that's just an inherent bad thing.
The thing that makes it a bad thing is that when you take something from someone, you are violating their right to that thing, which you know is theirs. You're implicit in your sentence is that you do acknowledge rights.
But I got to jump in here for a second.
Okay.
You're saying that no rights. I'm oversimplifying. What about the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? And all that's a piece of paper then, according to you.
Oh, sure.
It's just a piece of paper.
Yes, it is. And in that case, what you have to look to, I guess, this is sort of the lawyer part of it coming back in, is to say, well, you know, if somebody has said this is the way it is, then you say, well, says who and what are you going to do about it? Well, in this case, it's like it says the government of Canada, and what are you going to do about it? If you break it, then you're going to go to jail or whatever. There'll be some sanction applied. That's one way of looking at rights. Rights are things that somebody can impose on somebody else through power. You know, and that's what our government effectively does through laws.
Oh, I agree there are illegitimate rights and bogus rights that aren't real in the metaphysical fact.
But like, for instance, in the United States, there's a question about do you have the right to life, for instance, in their Constitution or whatever it is, Bill of Rights, they say that they have that right to life. And that argument has been used countless times in the context of capital punishment. You know, do you have the right to take away someone's life? Well, clearly you do in the United States. They have capital punishment all over
and
the place.
And abortion.
Yes, that's right. You know, and so again, it's a question of, so what do you mean by these things, and who says that's a fundamental right that should be treated differently than in any other law? Like, from my perspective, laws are things that we collectively get together and say, this is the way we ought to run our society. And the reason we should run it that way is because it's a good idea.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Ron, who's been waiting patiently. Good morning, Ron.
How are you doing, gentlemen?
Fine, thank you.
I must say I'm perplexed, and I've got so many things that I'd like to say. I'm perplexed that we have four intelligent men discussing something as simple as rights. Rights are quite simply first of all, that the basic rights, which are constitutionally protected, it's impossible to have an illegitimate right. That is an oxymoron in itself. Rights are constitutionally protected. Those are given rights. All the other rights we can discuss and argue about, they are not rights. Rights are things that are given to us as citizens that are constitutionally protected. And anyone.
Oh boy, I got to jump in here. I don't buy that for a minute. I don't think rights are given to you at all. If rights have any value, they have to be inherent. Because if you're saying the only rights you have are the rights the government gives you, then you're giving all the authority and all the power to the government. I don't buy that for a second.
The government doesn't give you anything. The government represents us. Rights are given to us by ourselves. We are the citizens. The Constitution is our Constitution. The Constitution is not a government
Constitution. It's not my Constitution.
Pardon?
It's not my Constitution.
It isn't?
No, sirree.
So you certainly have a fundamental misunderstanding of what the Constitution represents, then, Jim.
I believe you and I do, yes.
No. This is not a debatable or irrelative point. The Constitution is that protects us, that is our Constitution. In fact, if you look at the U.S. Constitution, it constantly refers to we, the citizens.
We the people. But ours doesn't do that.
Sorry, that's correct.
But ours doesn't do that. Ours is not the American Constitution.
No, but Jim, come on. I'm using that as a parallel. I certainly understand that.
Well, what do you mean, come on? You sound like you think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding at all.
No, I just think that you're being quite illogical there. And I say that respectfully. I don't think that you can seriously debate that no citizenry has rights. I mean, rights are entrenched in
the None of the three of us today said the citizenry do not have any rights. Nobody said that. I don't know where you got that from. None of the three of us have said that.
No, Jim, you are saying that you have a problem with people who use the word right, because no one has rights.
I don't know what show you're listening to, but I didn't. Did I say that? You guys recall me saying that? Because I sure didn't believe I said it.
Well, you did. Trust me. But let's
Well, I don't trust you because I don't believe I did, and neither of my guests recall me saying that. So,
what was your analogy to the pocket picking?
Pardon me?
What was your analogy to someone having the right to pick your pocket?
Well, I said I was talking about the use of the word entitlement, and that Marion Boyd had used that word and had gone on to explain that what it meant was that people in our society who were disadvantaged through no fault of their own, I don't remember her saying those words, but I'm sure she would have added that, through no fault of their own, had a right to be supported by people who were more successful in the community, in the society. My contention is that while I agree with what Jeff said and Bob said, that there's a lot of good reasons why we would want to do that, and I would support doing that,
sure.
I don't believe they have a right to.
Well, I agree. In that context, it was obviously misused. But then to jump on to the larger picture and saying that as a society we shouldn't use that word is making a quantum leap.
Who said that?
I don't think that's a right. And I think Marion Boyd probably used it loosely. And I don't think
she used it very specifically, and she and I have had this discussion more than once. It is a very specific use, and she believes people, at least she did then, last time I talked to her about it, that people had a right to that. Anyway, Ron, I have to leave it. We've got a lot of people waiting, but I appreciate your call and your thoughts today. And Gord's with us. Hi, Gord.
How you doing?
Fine, thanks.
Yeah, I think it boils down to that both sides are sort of entrenched. If we both look at each other's concerns and deal with them, it might work out better.
But don't you get the sense that our two guys today, they're not, I don't think they're entrenched at all. They're agreeing on a lot of things today, which kind of surprises me.
I know. Isn't that scary?
What is April Fool's Day? I don't know.
I can think of, take it down to almost an analogy of like tenants and renters,
yes,
or tenants and landlords.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you have to give 2 months notice and come up with first and last month's rent. Now, I can understand the concept why landlords want that. They're just trying to protect their property.
Yes.
I can understand that. But on the other hand, it is hard for people who are poor to come up with that and deal with that. Now, both sides could get together and come up with some kind of solution to deal with each other's concerns. This idea of, like you say, entitlement, you're picking my pocket.
The solution is there, though. The solution is very simple. The solution is that people should live up to the agreements they make. It's just that easy. And if every renter that signed a lease was prepared to live up to the terms of that lease, and if every landlord who signed a lease was equally prepared to live up to the terms of that lease, you wouldn't need the lease in the first place. You wouldn't need the piece of paper, and you certainly wouldn't need extra legislation to provide protection for either side. The problem is that many tenants don't take that seriously, and many landlords don't take their responsibility seriously. Ergo, we have to step in there with rules and regulations and legislations when, in the best of all possible worlds, two individuals of honor and probity would shake hands, and that'd be the end of it.
Not exactly. I know, but unfortunately it doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
But we have to come up with solutions, I guess, legally, that kind of, instead of where one side wins, the other side loses, where it's a balance.
Well,
Well, see, here's an example of just how things eroded to the point of where they are. A judge is faced with a tenant who cannot, say, in some situation, afford to pay his landlord. The judge, sheds pity on him, let's say, and lets him get away with it. The landlord learns a lesson. He says, well, from now on, since the court is not going to protect my interest and I have no recourse, I'm going to demand these terms in my lease. And then it just escalates from there because the courts haven't done their proper job in the first place. The issue of poverty is a totally separate issue from justice, separate from everything else, and until we learn to deal with it like that, we're just going to get in this quagmire deeper and deeper.
But I think Gord's saying, though, that it's much more useful to talk about the reason why things ought to be the way they are, the reason for a law, than to just say it should be the law because that's my right, or it should be the law because that's my entitlement. It's like, well, no, tell me, practically speaking, what does it mean to you? What are the problems?
But the law doesn't care about that. You can ask landlords from one end of this country to the other, you know, why is this a problem for you? And they all tell you very plainly, but the law doesn't care. In certain situations, and I would characterize them as extreme situations, the law may call a I was going to say recalcitrant. That's the wrong word. Deadbeat. I don't want to use it. Well, okay, deadbeat tenant. Occasionally, the law will call a deadbeat tenant to account. But more often than not, the tenant simply walks away, owing a month or 2 months or whatever. The system is structured in such a way the landlord cannot possibly recoup the money he's lost. Ergo, the landlord is cut out of the equation. And as Bob said, the next time a tenant comes, the landlord is that much harder on.
But it's the same thing that slumlords get away with stuff all the time, too. But fundamentally, though, as far as how our laws come about, say they don't come about, they're not received wisdom from the heavens or whatever. They're things that are debated. And for landlord tenant law is a good example where we've just had a massive change in the law that's come about after public consultations. There's been all kinds of
But it's interesting you say that because you can make the case that our laws have come down from above. If you lived by each of the Ten Commandments, you could throw away everything else if everybody did it.
But those aren't our laws. Our laws may be based in those things, and you're right. Fundamentally, that's where we may have ideas about what our values are, what our sense of right and wrong is.
And you can simplify it even more. Some people have said if we all lived by the golden rule, you wouldn't need another law, and I think you can make that case, too.
Oh, sure. Everything you need to know you learned in kindergarten, fundamentally.
Gord, I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you for joining us today. And Rose is with us. Hi, Rose.
Yes, good morning, Jeff, Bob, and Jim.
Good morning.
I hope I can articulate my thoughts here because you were pushing all the right buttons when I was listening to this program. And I was getting a little angry, and then I was getting happy, and then, boy, I was on a real roller coaster here. Welfare, I'm going to start there, for instance. There was a comment made that some people think that it's their right to be supported, and I had heard a comment that was saying, well, who says so? Who gives them the right to make these choices? And the government is basically going to help these people out because they're in dire straits. Well, if you're going to talk about rights, then I would like to contend that I feel very strongly with my right as a parent that I want to have a proper society based on what I'm teaching my children here at home. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching them a high ideal of respect your neighbors, go and work for your living, do not take welfare, speak properly, don't use any vulgarity, stay out of jail, stay out of trouble, honor the law. And, in fact, that law actually can turn around and bite you in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
As far as renting is concerned, I was at the one option with my husband. We rented a property, and we treated it as our own property. And it was the way we were brought up.
Yes.
So everybody's talking about their rights, and I'm getting so sick and tired of it. What happens to morality? What happens to respecting your neighbors, respecting yourself, and basically wanting to have a good work ethic, you know? And as far as the children concerned, all these laws that are being produced now, do they really have children in mind? They want to legalize prostitution. They want to legalize drugs. They want to legalize...
Well, who's they, though? Who wants to do this?
Well, I would like to find that out because I believe that there are a certain group that want to... And they actually, in fact, Jim, had legalized the age of consent to 14, and I think that is disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
who's protecting our children? My children are going out into a world where they do not think that that's going to be happening to them.
Yes.
But it can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all these terrible things can happen to our children, and nobody's protecting them.
So, Rose...
The government is actually, as well as the lawmakers, mm-hmm. are passing these laws.
Mm-hmm.
So how are these laws being passed? Somebody in court has to actually provide a bill in order for it to be passed. So anybody that's got the power and has the know-how could, and if they really truly believe that what they're doing is doing their job basically because it's for the better good of everyone,
mm-hmm.
could they not actually say, no, we shouldn't be doing this, or maybe making a comment that I don't want to pass this law, or whatever it has to take. It seems like anything that was put to the table, if there's money in it, okay, we'll pass the law.
Well, you know, the politicians would argue it's not that at all, that the laws have to go through a very rigorous screening process and public debate, public discussion.
Oh, sure. If it's going through this rigorous screening process, though, it's being only screened by a certain elitist. It's only being put to the table by a certain elitist. The regular person that's working 8 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
and then coming home and taking care of their family, they're not going to be running around trying to make laws.
Maybe they should be.
Well, they should be, but they're not. So we're actually putting our trust in our legality system to do the best thing for the society that can happen.
Yeah, because we're too lazy to get involved. So whose fault is that?
Well, if it's the society's fault, Jim, yes, absolutely. Okay, so we have this program right now. Let's get more people on that will actually maybe encourage people to stand up for their rights as parents, for instance, the right for society instead of
that. Well, Rose, we do Talk of the Town 5 days a week, and it's an open forum for a good portion of those 5 days for people to talk about exactly those things, and I like to think that we do talk about a lot of them.
Okay, well, we're talking about that right now, Jim,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be calling my MP on this Bill 14 because I think that's disgusting, but how many more people will do this?
Well,
this is the scary thing. We're talking about rights of people, but I think this is the fierce thing where people are using rights.
Well, you see, one of the rights we have today in this country, and whether it's right or wrong, one of the rights we have is to be indifferent to government, and lots of people exercise that, quote, right.
Be indifferent to government in what case, though?
Well,
if all these bills are being passed, to say,
hey, you know, I'm too busy. I work 8 hours. I haven't got time to get involved. You know, as I've said many, many times, the one great misconception people have is that because you feel strongly about something that the government is doing, you don't want them to do it, that they should stop doing it instantly. It doesn't work that way. If you want to exercise some level of control over the governmental process or the legislative process, you have to get involved in that process, and it will take literally years.
Oh, sure, but it doesn't take one person, though. It takes one person to get a bill passed.
It takes one at a time.
It doesn't take one person to repeal that bill.
Well,
it takes a lot of people putting a lot of time into it, and petitions after petitions.
I think it was Nellie McClung or somebody said that people believe that one dedicated person can't change the world. She said, in fact, that's the only thing that ever has.
That's absolutely true.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, what about the, I have to prove ignorant. There's a gentleman that's saying that they're going to make a referendum. Why don't they have a referendum on certain issues? Okay,
Rose.
Pardon?
I've been listening to you here, Rose, and you said when you called in that we pushed all the right buttons. You're kind of doing that to me, too, and I'm going through the I'm laughing, I'm crying routine as well. On the one hand, I hear you, exhibit concern about your right as a parent to teach your values at home and you wish that there were, you know, that would be taught in the public school system or whatever. On the other hand, you're concerned about legalizing things like prostitution and drugs
mm-hmm.
when... I think what you have to look at is that the same authority that allows a government to prohibit people from using drugs or engaging in what it calls commercial sex, I guess, is the same power that prevents you from exercising your right as a parent through the school system.
I'm glad you brought that up, because in fact, I as a parent did go down to the school and did call the superintendent, did complain about people taking out the prayer, which I really don't believe could affect or hurt anyone,
mm-hmm.
For a moral standing, why even, if we're not going to be a moral society, then okay, take out the prayer, which they did. I went down, everybody looked at me, and I felt like a total idiot by the time I left out of there, because they thought, it's really not necessary. They articulated their words so well that I didn't have a voice. If I had like 10 people behind me, then maybe I would have been a stronger voice.
Where were the other 10 people?
They didn't have the concern I did. Oh, well, we go to church and we don't really need the prayer because you might be offending somebody. They didn't have the concern. So my concern was not heard. Didn't affect anybody. So what are you going to say to me? I did try.
Well, you're never going to. You will never be listened to or acknowledged in a public government-run education system. You have to have the choice of being able to put your kids and your tax dollars, if the government insists on taking them from you, into the school of your choice.
Oh, but I, as a taxpayer, should have some kind of right to voice my concern.
But you do,
having the choice can you exercise a right. I mean, you can yell to your blue in the face if somebody's got you behind a prison bar. You can't do anything about it.
Then tell me, how does the gay rights get all the rights that they have, then?
One at a time. One person started and got support for their position.
Why were they listened to and I wasn't?
No, I don't think that the
initial... You're not done yet. You're still working on it.
And I don't think the first person was listened any more than you at the situation you just... It's the same thing I said before, Rose. It doesn't change today. Because you're mad about something today doesn't mean it's going to happen. It's not going to change. And if 10,000 people are mad today for the first day, it's not going to change today. The system doesn't... No system works that way.
Okay, but I think that's the frustrating thing for parents and for a lot of people. When they want to change something, they mention their concerns, and then it's like, go away, we don't want to hear from you, and that's what they do.
But if it's a small minority, I mean, that is also the part of the function of a collectivist society, that the voice of the majority tends to have more weight. Until you're in the majority, that's going to happen, and I submit to you, that's the way it should be. If you're an isolated individual, whatever the issue is, if you're an isolated individual, you have and should have the right to stand up and speak. You should have the right to talk to your friends and neighbors and try to convince them of that your position is correct, and all of you as a collective should then have the right to present that to the government, to lobby the government, to work for or against the government in any way you choose. But I do not buy the idea that an individual has a right to insist that government change to suit you as an individual. I don't buy that.
Not to suit us, to hear the actual concerns, because I don't believe everybody actually gives enough time to issues.
Well, absolutely, but that's the whole point. I mean,
well, that's why I'm saying make it easier for those people.
How are you going to do it? How are you going to make it easier? How would you make it easier?
Well,
it's not easy.
Rose, would you be happy if we had a system where you could just pay for the education of your kids in the school of your choice and not have to pay education taxes and not have to send them to a state monopoly school?
Okay, you're talking about education, and actually education and morality go hand in hand. And this
yes, but I'm asking you
well,
whether you would be willing to assume the responsibility.
No, I think
that
you're going to be opening up another can of worms, because you're talking about the Jewish, you're talking about Roman Catholics, you're talking about Presbyterians, you're talking about Anglicans, and if they're all wanting to have their kids educated, isn't it?
I think we're narrowing the focus too much. And Rose, your concern, as I understood it, was that you were concerned about the fact that people aren't listening to you, or you're not being listened to. You made your case and nobody listened.
I'm not concerned about that so much. That was just one example.
But I think
I'm
that's a very good
with
example.
The fact that things are being changed, and I hear a lot of people complaining as well, but nothing happens.
Well, I suggest to you that not enough people are complaining. You hear about them because somebody gets on a soapbox and the media covers the story and says Joe Blow doesn't like this, but where are the other 100,000 or million Joe Blows who agree with him?
All you have to do is be a person that's not... feeling that they're an educated person, they're talking to somebody that's got a PhD, they've gone to university for 5 years, and they can talk circles around you.
Well,
you don't really want to debate an issue with them.
Ralph Klein. There's lots of very effective communicators who don't have PhDs.
Absolutely.
And they talk people into their ideas, and then ends up happening.
Okay, but I know for one fact, that was just an example, and they gave up, basically.
You can't do that. You can't give up. If you believe in what you're saying and you really believe in it, then you cannot give up. You're not allowed to give up. You don't have the right to give up.
You take the long perspective,
then.
Though.
But I have to give up this conversation.
Yes,
I appreciate your call.
Okay,
thanks
nice
for joining
with
us.
You.
And we'll be back right after this. Jeff Schlemmer, Bob Metz, and Jim Chapman here in Left, Right, and Center. We're back to the phones with caller Ron. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Jim. How are you this morning?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Interesting topic.
Thank you.
I haven't got much time, but I want to make a quick comment. I think I agree with you. This is not my constitution either.
Mm-hmm.
They're not my charter of rights and freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that we have with that lady that was just talking to you, she says, well, you know, you can't do anything. Well, the problem is that our lawmakers are not making the laws. The new lawmakers now are the courts.
Yes.
and that's because of, and we have no jurisdiction there. We can't do anything
that's
about
right.
that unless we elect our judges.
That's where it does get, that is the one point at which I agree with people who say, I'm frustrated because there's nothing I can do. When you reach that level, that's absolutely right.
But it was and the politicians that we elected
that's
who decided
the major
it should be that way.
Well, that's true.
As far as I see it.
Right. Appreciate the call, Ron.
Okay.
Thank you. No, you're right, Jeff. It was the politicians. But again, and I hate to harp on this, and there's been essays and essays written by people saying that people using my line of argument are full of baloney. But I still say we deserve it. You get the government you deserve. I will go to my grave believing that because nobody's ever even come close to changing my mind. All the things that the politicians have done, ultimately they have done because we have sanctioned them doing it in our society anyway, in Canada. We can say, well, you know, we voted for Mulroney. We thought one thing and he did something else. That's true. But, you know, the vote is not the end of your franchise. And that's the other thing. I believe too many Canadians believe I vote once every 4 years and I've done my job.
The vote isn't even the beginning of your franchise.
Well, there you go.
If you're like me, who's voted for a losing candidate all his life, I've never been represented under this democracy.
Yeah, well, it's very true. Let's go back to the phones where Ivan joins us. Hello, Ivan.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
That's good. Yes, I believe that the reason that people in this country believe that the government owes them something, they're partially right, Jim, with our tax system.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's a $50,000 car.
Mm-hmm.
You pay 15% tax. Mm-hmm. That's $7,500.
Yeah.
Do you realize how much health care that would buy you for $7,500?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For instance, if you didn't have the terrible taxation, the 13% raise that politicians received here in the city, some got 16%, that's a taxation on the public.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't have this type of tax system, then people could get their own health care, they could get their own pensions.
Yeah. But what about the people who wouldn't do it? That's always the question that
comes
up.
Well, that's their problem.
Yeah, but
Jim. It's not my problem.
But Ivan, in a compassionate society, can we say that? Can we allow people to starve in the midst of plenty?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Same thing as you go to the university hospital, people are in there to get well, and they're outside smoking.
Mm-hmm.
They should be kicked out of the hospital. They shouldn't be allowed to go into the hospital. Mm-hmm. It's costing me money and you money.
Unless they are paying for it for themselves. Then they can be in the hospital all they want and smoke all the cigarettes.
That's right.
Want.
And here's something else. I totally agree that they should legalize prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
They should legalize marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, it doesn't matter. People will do it. Now, if they legalized prostitution and marijuana...
Yeah.
It would save the taxpayers money. It would also save on the health care system because these prostitutes would be in houses that are controlled. They would get medical examinations, and people wouldn't go out and get AIDS. All kinds of good things. You can't pass laws for people's morals. And anyway, who says that going to see a prostitute is immoral?
Well, some of our callers today.
Yeah, but that's their opinion.
Yeah.
For them, it might be immoral, but it might not be immoral for me. So who has the right to say what's moral for me and immoral as long as I'm not hurting them?
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Ivan.
Have a great day, Jim.
You too, sir.
And your two guests also have a great day.
I'm sure they will.
Cheers, bye.
And we'll be back right after this. And we're busy kibitzing with each other here off the air. But that's okay. Next Wednesday is Law Day.
It is.
And I'm going to suggest to my guests that we perhaps take a look at the law yesterday and today and maybe tomorrow in the country. Would that work?
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
In honor of Law Day?
Well, it also is the anniversary of the passage of the Charter of Rights, so may tie in as well.
Anniversary. There's no celebratory sense to the word anniversary, is there? No, okay. It's simply marking time. Alrighty.
I like Ryan, the charter. Since 1982, I'm still counting.
What was I trying to say? I forget what I was going to say. Oh, I was just going to thank everybody for calling today. That's what I was going to do. Because we've had an interesting show. A lot of things have hit the plate and been moved around and discussed.
What are we going to talk about today? I can't remember
either.
I don't know what
it was and away we went. But that's part of the fun. And you're always welcome to phone on this program to participate in that way, to kind of, you know, try to set us off on a path. We're always pleased to hear from you. So for Jeff Schlemmer and Bob Metz and Ryan and Tara, it's Jim saying thank you for calling today. Please take care of each other and for listening, too. Take care of each other. Mind how you go. And we'll be back tomorrow. Dale Henderson is our guest. He's with Advance London. They've got some big plans that I think are going to make a tremendous difference to this community if... they can get the politicians out of the way and get the job done. We're going to talk about that challenge and many others too, plus whatever else happens. It's all coming up on the next edition of Talk of the Town. Take care. Bye-bye.